Nicknames are fun things. When our daughter Sarah was a little baby, just about the same age as our grandson, Teddy. Teddy's now 4 months old. We got in her face and we'd go, boo, 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 boo. She would light up like fireworks. Her smile was as big as her head. And her dad and I would call her Boo. I still call her Boo now and again. She's 36 now, but that name connects me to those early days of innocence and delight and unconditional love. Simon, the son of Joseph, gets to know Jesus when they're both grown men. And it is in this story today that Jesus first calls Simon, son of Joe, by an endearing nickname, Rock, or in Greek, Petra. But why did Jesus call Simon, son of Jonah, Rock? Look no farther than our reading from Isaiah, where the prophet tells us that Abraham and Sarah, the foundation of all humanity, foundation of Israel, are the rock and the quarry from which Israel gets its identity. And who is the rock of Abraham? Okay, when I give a Sunday school question, the answer is either God or Jesus, okay? So, who is the rock of Abraham? Thank you. It is the Lord, the God of Israel, who blessed them and made them the beloved people. With the nickname of Rock, Jesus is telling Simon that, like Abraham, he is the foundation that church that Jesus is building. Note to the Pope, Jesus is building the church. The church that Jesus is building, as I said last week, is nothing less than an outpost of the kingdom of heaven, an outpost of the reign of God right here and right now, where people seek to do God's will on earth as it is in heaven, and thereby bring a taste of heaven to a world beset by selfishness and all the consequences of that selfish, sinful attitude. Why did Jesus make Simon the rock, the foundation of all of this? If you ask me, it was a risky choice. Simon had just finished sinking like a rock, like a stone in the Sea of Galilee, and in just six more verses later, Simon will be arguing with Jesus, telling Jesus he should not suffer and die. And then, of course, 10 chapters after that, to save his own skin, three times Simon will deny that he even knows Jesus. Yet, Simon, this impetuous, often clueless blockhead, was the first man who called Jesus the Christ, the Messiah of Israel, the Son of the living God. Jesus makes it clear that Simon did not arrive at this insight through study, intellect, or even rumor. It was given to him by God the Father. Simon didn't earn it. He didn't figure it out. It was a gift from the kingdom of heaven to a flawed, conflicted, simple-minded person who quickly demonstrates that he doesn't have a clue what Jesus' identity as the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of the living God, is all about. I'm pretty sure this cluelessness is why Jesus told Simon and all the others not to tell anyone he was the Christ, because the chief teaching in Judaism of that time was that the Christ, the Messiah, was a holy warrior like King David had been, who would establish himself on the throne in the palace in Jerusalem and become the earthly king of the world. Simon and the others could not yet see that Jesus was a very different kind of king. Right then, they'd get this Christ business entirely wrong if they started speculating about it, so he told them, don't talk about it. Not till later. Nonetheless, Jesus says then that he'll build his church on Simon, the blockhead. This gives me enormous comfort because I can be a real blockhead too. The foundation of the church is not grounded on Simon's achievements, but on what God is doing in, with, and through him. Now, Matthew never explains what the rock does with those keys that Jesus gave him, but we do know that after the resurrection of Jesus, Peter dedicated his life to proclaiming God's forgiveness, inclusion, and hope to a weary world whose inhabitants die like gnats, in that comforting language from Isaiah. And in today's weary world, we are also rocks from God's quarry, those whose foundation of faith is not necessarily mighty visions of glory, but trust in the process, trust in the promise that God is still active in creation, has not left humanity to be buffeted helplessly by hell until time ends. No, in fact, in Jesus the Christ, hell has met its match. Hell hasn't stopped sending misery through its gates, but one day those gates will be crushed by the power of heaven. In Jesus, God became a human being who lived and died like a gnat swatted down by human institutions, wielding the swords of selfishness, hate, fear, and death. But the world's hellishness could not withstand the God of light and life. Jesus was resurrected from the dead. God killed death. Death no longer had the last word in human life. This wasn't only for Jesus, though. Jesus has promised to bring us to that very same resurrected life in and with Jesus, not because we deserve it or earn it, but because God's love is stronger than our hate, and he will love us and give himself to us forever, for as long as it takes. This is the gospel. This is the good news that makes me want to shout to frolic and to yell, zippity-doo-dah, and do whatever I can do to bring a slice of heaven to a world that endures so much hell. Y'all already know this. Y'all already know that God is not daunted by our blockheadedness. Y'all already know that God gives grace and gifts to each one of us. And even better than that, y'all already know that those gifts have one purpose, to bring the power of heaven into everyday life. In using these gifts, as Paul says, we are to be a living sacrifice. Remember, sacrifice does not mean suffering. To sacrifice means to make holy. We bless the world in God's power and God's name, and we make it a holier place through that blessing. Y'all showed me that you live in this power of being a living sacrifice of priestly service to the world. I'm not the only priest here. All y'all are making the world holy. All of y'all are a living sacrifice. That means you're all priests. So there. You show me that you understand this through that amazing quilt you gave me last week. Every single one of those icons on that quilt represents a ministry, represents a way that y'all make holiness. You show the power of heaven to a weary world. Just looking at that quilt makes me want to frolic. Here's what I also know. We see God's plan only in part. And as Paul warns us, we need to stay humble. We need to stay united. We need to stay focused on Christ's mission. We can't be sure what God has planned for us next. Remember, Simon simply could not comprehend that Jesus would suffer and die. That's not how Simon thought a powerful God should act. And of course, Simon was wrong. And God transformed the world through a power Simon couldn't imagine until it happened. That power changed Simon forever. Just so, this outpost of God's kingdom here needs to remain nimble and open to new ways for God to act through this parish, to empower it. This wonderful church family needs to keep adding stuff to this quilt, being thankful for what God has enabled us to do so far, but always poised and ready for the new ways. The new ways, I mean, who thought of a virtual craft show a year ago? We've discovered all kinds of new ways of staying connected. And we need to keep being creative and intentional and open to new ideas on how to get this done so that we can be a blessing to the world. Yes, we have to be open to the new ways, the new people, and yes, the new pastor that God will give to the body of Christ here in this place. All for one purpose, for God's purpose of making this weary world just a little holier. Our life is hidden in God. God's creating life is so much stronger than hell's stupefying death. And God's unconditional love is far more powerful than our self-serving hate. God is love, and love wins. Love always wins. One last time together, let's stand up and shout out our joy at the good news that love wins. Zippity-doo-dah!